Welcome to another recruiting edition of the Brocast. And folks, next week has finally arrived. We have been promising that Greg Biggins would be on next week, and that next week is this week. Brandon Huppin with Rivals.com, joined by Rivals National Recruiting Analyst Greg Biggins. Finally, we're able to get the calendar to work. GB, good to have you here.
Hey, Hupp. It's great to have. I'm flustered right now. I'm not used to talking to you like this. It's great to be here. I was going to say it's great to have me, but that sounds arrogant. It's great to be on with you.
It is great to have you. We've been talking, since, 2013, we have not been able to get our schedules to align so that we could get you on.
That's bull crap. There is no schedule. I've always been available. You just haven't wanted me to be on with you. So let's not go there, right? You've kind of big time me for the last 25 years. And I'm still trying to get over this.
This is an era of agent, and your agent has been really difficult to deal with over the last 13 years. And so we were able to finally come to an NIL agreement where I was going to ask you rent the car one time and drive wherever we went. But we were able to get that voided in the contract, and we still got you on. So I saw you this weekend. We were down in Southern California at the Elite 11. Saw a couple of UCLA targets at Elite 11, saw a couple of UCLA commits on Sunday at the 7-on-7. But all while that was going on in Manhattan Beach, up the road, UCLA was hosting a second official visit weekend. Wasn't as big as the other weekends that they've had, but still some pretty significant visitors that were there last weekend. Most notably, kind of the big one that kind of came out of nowhere was Joshua Sam Appelli out of Douglas County, Georgia, four-star offensive lineman. And they have another offensive lineman, Weston Hicks, out of Avon Old Farms in Connecticut. And Hicks left with a commitment to the Bruins. And then from a receiver standpoint, they also had Rob Larson, who's committed to them out of Folsom, and then Matthew Gregory, four-star receiver from the East Coast, who took the visit to UCLA. The Bruins were very high on his list. So certainly some intriguing names that were there, but one that was probably the most intriguing, and you just wrote about him, Jaden Watt Green from Corona Centennial. Where would you say this visit ranked for Jaden, and you know who right now is the schools that are probably the biggest threats to UCLA?
Yeah, so I think it was actually our dear friend Adam Gorney who did the post-visit recap. Now, going into this trip, I can say Washington looked like a pretty strong leader. And I believe the reason why, now don't get me wrong, I do believe UCLA is in the mix. And I think the reason why he moved them up from June, you know, it was late June, might have been his last trip, to May 29th. And so I think UCLA is probably in that top three. He's going to go to, he's actually at Vanderbilt right now. He taking a quick little, Kevin called it a midweek visit. It's more like an early week visit. And then UW will be this weekend. He's got two more trips. My guess, Hop, is I don't think he's going to take those last two. I really think he'll probably decide after the Washington trip. And just kind of keeping it real, I think the Huskies are probably in a good spot. He did love UCLA, but Washington's been on him for a very, very long time. And what we're seeing and hearing quite a bit on the recruiting trail is Taylor Mays has quickly become one of the best safety recruiters. He's kind of getting anybody he wants. And Taylor Mays has made Jane a priority. And so right now, that's kind of where my gut is.
With UCLA hosting Walt Green over the weekend, now, as you said, he's heading to Washington for the weekend. They've got a good amount of safeties that have been.
They do.
So it's not like safety is a complete priority. Oh, you got Khalil Terry, already have a commitment from Pole Mawala. And then, you know, the secondary, we've already started to see some fluidity, as we'd like to say, in the last couple of weeks with guys that were originally scheduled to take visits that no longer are taking that visit. And part of that was because the commitment of Juju Johnson. And Juju committed last month, went on the visit, and then you got a chance to see him on Sunday at the Elite 11, catching passes a week before. He was the opening regional in Dallas. We'll see him later this month at the opening finals. But you know, before we get into the Elite 11, just talking to Juju, I know that you still would have loved a package deal with him and Dante Wright, but it feels like with the commitment of Juju and him not playing his junior year, he's kind of coming back with a vengeance in this very period that he's been. What's been your impression just seeing him this spring?
That is a great word, vengeance. Like, he is one of those guys, man. He's got a major chip on his shoulder, and he has hit me up multiple times saying, "Hey, man, I want my ranking back. I want my old rank." Like, it's like a big deal for him, right? Some kids like don't care, or I should say, everybody cares. Some kids just verbalize it differently than others. He's like, I mean, people don't remember, he was rated higher than Dante Wright going into their junior year. He was the guy, 10, 300 meter, two-way player, dominated on the 7-on-7 circuit, playing for Team Toa and Big Nick, Ia Maliava. Mm-hmm. Juju was the dude. And Dante was kind of this guy who was the, you know, bigger, longer athlete, but not as good of a football player as Juju. And then Dante kind of just took off over the last year, credit to him. And Juju's kind of been out of sight, out of mind. So I talked to some people who saw Juju at the Frisco opening regional in Texas, and they said he was unbelievable, MVP of the event, doing it on both sides. He measured in a shade under 6 feet, which you'll take that. He ran really well. He jumped well. This is a uber athletic kid who I think's got NFL upside. And if he has the kind of senior season, and he's going to be a three-phaser, meaning he's going to play receiver and also return punts and kicks. If he has the kind of year that we all think he can, he's going to rise up the charts. He really is. The traits are there. The game, in terms of the traits, it will match what you see on the tape. He's going to have, you know, statistically some numbers to match up the traits. And so I think he's going to move up, and he could potentially be in that high four, even five-star discussion if he goes and has the kind of year that we think he can.
Speaking of that, you know, somebody, he didn't play his junior year, but somebody who really just started playing football as a junior, and this is the guy that I know you're super high on, took his official visit over the weekend to UCLA, committed in May, God's choice, Ibogbodin. You know, you've gotten a chance to see him, and I think that he's still, besides having a phenomenal name, he's still kind of a relatively new and unfamiliar name to a lot of folks. Took his official visit this weekend. We saw his pictures of him in the photo shoot. I mean, just looks like a guy who'd be playing college ball right now. But, you know, give bro a little bit of a breakdown of what you see from him as a player and what you think ultimately his upside can be.
I mean, I think he's got NFL upside for sure. I think right now we have him as a high three, which not everybody probably knows. I don't want to speak a foreign language. I think he's an 89. Is that correct, Huff?
Yep.
Correct, so for us, a 90 is a four-star. So he's like right there. And there's literally no difference between an 89 and a 90. It's a numbers game. You can't give out 1,000 four-stars. So our four-star cutoff is typically, you know, the top 350 players or so. So he's a top 400 guy. It was kind of funny. I kept seeing his height and weight, you know, 6'5 and 220. He's like closer to 260. Mm-hmm. So Hardy Nickerson, who's the new coach and former NFL guy, played at Cal. I hit him up about, you know, him and Lincoln. Help me out with Lincoln's last name. I should be better at the. I asked about both of those two young men, and he goes, "These are both NFL guys." He goes, "God's choice is amazing." He goes, he was shocked that a guy who's only played 1 year of high school football, he kind of had a clue. You know what I mean? He was playing on the edge, but like when he was trying to figure out, you know, stuff out in terms of, you know, reads and reacting quickly and not getting lost and, you know, not overcommitting to this. And he goes, he has a natural feel for how to play the position. He follows the ball. He doesn't get, you know, like any in terms of size, speed, the thing that we love, height, weight, length, speed, he's got it. Motor, he's got it. Athleticism, he's got that. So this guy, I think, has a chance to be really special. I watched this, you know, because I'm weird. I'm up till like 2 a.m. watching his basketball stuff on Instagram, and he's head above the rim. He put up 30 on modern day. Now, I know modern day is not the same modern day when I was in high school, when they were dominant in hoops. Ocean View High School is probably right there, number two behind them, Huff. Those Ocean View modern day. A quick little segue.
People are saying
modern day Ocean View hoops games back in the 90s were like, that was like what modern day Bosco is for football, but I digress. His hoop stuff was excellent. Natural movement, balance, fluidity. It carries over to the football field. So I know I've kind of long-winded way of saying I think the guy could be special, and he's going to end the year. I'll be shocked if he doesn't end the year in the top 300.
And then that's what I think, you know, is so valuable about the senior year eval. And I know that Charles Power, who's the director of scouting at Rivals, has continued to harp that point over the last few months, is that there is still an important senior year, and that gets lost, I think, by fans. because the recruiting cycle is so, and the calendar is so sped up, where you want 95% of your class, if not 100% of your class, done by the end of June. You forget they still have their whole senior season to play. And there's a lot of guys that still will emerge as seniors, guys that maybe weren't necessarily UCLA targets. And I think that's a good segue. I do want to touch on Christian Hanshaw real quick, but I think it is a good segue to quarterback recruiting. And, you know, you brought this up on the Rivals show a few weeks ago and talking about another school that doesn't have a quarterback commitment in this class and, you know, saying, hey, they're in a position where they can evaluate somebody as a senior. And if they want to add them, they add them after this season because they can go get a lower tier P4 or a guy who's a group of five. And maybe UCLA does that. Maybe they see if there's a group of five commit right now or a guy who's only getting group of five attention has a big senior year and then catapults himself into being like DJ Bordeaux did last year. You know, DJ Bordeaux, I think he's at Boston College, but, you know, decommitted and went from being a JMU target to a UCLA signee. There's still value in the senior season. And now UCLA heads into the stretch run of recruiting without a quarterback commit. Their main target committed elsewhere. Brady Edmonds, who they have been recruiting, you've been all over that. Still committed to Ohio State, where he's been committed for a shoot. Almost feels like almost 2 years. And then Colton Nussmeier, who we got to see at Elite 11. You know, we were there. I was there Friday and Saturday. You were there all weekend. You know, first give your assessment of each of those guys' performance over the weekend and kind of where you see UCLA in their recruitment at this point.
Yeah. So I actually like Brady. And I've probably been, you know, I think the thing with big quarterbacks, he dealt with some knee tendonitis as a junior. And I remember seeing him early on in the year, and his mobility was really lacking. Now, he's not ever going to be Michael Vick, but I remember him as a freshman basketball player. I mean, he would catch it in the post, drop step, and two-hand dunk. Mm-hmm. So this isn't a stiff. This isn't a – I'm not going to name names, but there's been a couple other – I might be going to go there. I'm not very politically correct, but I don't want to go there. There's been a couple of quarterbacks that have been kind of like tall and white who haven't really developed over the course of the last few years. And so so I know Brady's got some – he's a better athlete than given credit for. And what happened was he had the knee tendonitis. And I didn't know this until I was sitting in the press box. You already mentioned Charles. He's put on 15 pounds since over the last year. Hmm. And I was like, are you sure? And then we brought up his, you know, his weight. I was like, dang, he's gained a lot of weight. I think a lot of that was because he couldn't really work out because of the knee tendonitis. And you see he's labors when he moves. You don't want a quarterback who's laboring. You want them to have some twitch to them. You want them to be able to escape and extend plays. You want them to be able to, you know, if you want to roll them outside the pocket. Matthew Stafford is probably the last of the true pocket guys that can always stay in the pocket. You need to have a guy who's, you know, can move around a little bit. And that hasn't been Brady. But in terms of pure throwing, he's got a big time arm. He throws everything on a rope. One of my critiques, and I'm always honest with him, I've told him, I go, hey, you don't always need to throw fastballs, man. You can take some off. Learn how to layer a throw. Learn how to maybe throw with some touch down the field. It doesn't always have to be, you know, 90 miles an hour. And I think he gets that, but that's another kind of, you know, somebody can maybe be a little critical is, hey, it's always one speed. You want to be able to be a guy who can change speeds up a little bit. But overall, I thought Brady was good. He would have probably been in my 10 to 12. I don't know if he, you know, he made the student sports Elite 11. I think he didn't quite make ours, but I think he probably would have been right there. But he had a couple of good workouts, and I was encouraged. And I think with drop some weight, maybe try to get some of that old athleticism back in your you know, your play style. I think he's got a chance. Colton Nussmeier talking about injuries. I didn't know this. You know, he tore his ACL last year and isn't going to do surgery. So that's something to monitor. I would say in terms of arm talent, he was probably on the lower end, right? Like, you know, there were some routes. You know, the highlight of the first night is always, it's called the rail shot challenge. And what it is, it's basically you have to 18 to 20 and you're roping that thing. I mean, that thing is on a line. You're trying to visualize receiver beats the corner. Here comes a safety over the top. You need to rip that ball before the safety can get there. And it's kind of where, you know, Jaron Kiame Tekapolotele, that's kind of where he put his name on the map. Obviously, me and you already knew who he was, huh? But for the rest of the people, you know, they didn't know this guy had that kind of juice. I would say he struggled. And maybe we should have an uncomfortable conversation about, you know, Ryan Mikowski, because I know Bro has been talking about, hey, should Ryan, and not even trying to segue it, but Ryan won the rail shot challenge. He's a 5'11 quarterback, but I'll tell you what, man, he's got some arm talent. I think there is a correlation. Usually sub 6 feet quarterbacks don't have big arms. It's just kind of like, you know, that's just where your, you know, physical stature, bigger guys throw the ball harder. I'm not saying you need to throw it hard to be a good quarterback. You need to be able to complete a pass, but typically the sub 6 feet quarterbacks, if there's a knock, you'd say, okay, does he have enough arm talent to succeed at the next level? I think Ryan does. 100%. And not taking a shot at Colton, because he might not have been 100%, but if you're watching those two throw it side by side, it wasn't even close. Mm-hmm. Like, one guy's ripping it, and the other guy's kind of throwing like me, and I wouldn't recruit me. So, again, I'm just saying, Rakowski is very intriguing to me. And it's funny listening to people that kept saying, oh, this is his environment. He's supposed to shine in this environment. I'm like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I think that it was kind of like a knock saying, oh, he's the smallest quarterback. Yeah, he's going to do well. And I go, you say that about people who maybe lack some physical tools. I go, take off the blinders. He's throwing darts. Yeah. Like, that, the way he's throwing it, that translates to any type of environment. Forget 7-0. Yeah, he always plays with Chile, and therefore he's going to be good in this environment. Yeah, he's good because he can throw the football. I want a guy who can throw the football. I want a guy who can anticipate. I want a guy who throws on time. I want a guy who can change speeds. And so if the knock was, yeah, he's under 6 feet, therefore he probably doesn't have a good arm, he's always had a pretty good arm. Mm-hmm. I've seen him since he was a freshman. I've broadcasted his games when he won a state title. And he's always had underrated arm talent. He can move. He's a gamer. He's tough. Talked about juju. Ryan's got a chip on his shoulder also. He knows what people say. His best offer right now is Nevada. Not throwing shade at the Wolfpack, but I'm saying I think he's better than that. And so if I'm UCLA, I'm watching him. I'm going to try to get him on camp, to my camp, and I'm taking a pretty hard look at him, and I'm very curious about him.
Bruce Feldman always has a great feature after the Elite 11, and I thought he made a absolutely spot-on comp in comparing him to Jay Kaner, who 10 years ago made the 11 finals. Remember at the time, Jake was his only Power 4 offer, or at the time it was the Power 5, was from the University of Washington. And I remember talking to Jonathan Smith, who was the offensive coordinator at Washington at that time. And one of the things that he liked about Jay Kaner is he said he reminded me a lot of me. And he didn't remind Jonathan Smith of Brandon Huffman. He reminded Jonathan Smith in that he wasn't the biggest guy in the world, but he played, you know, angry. And there's a lot of Washington fans that kind of bemoan the way things went down when Jake Browning's eligibility expired based on one game. And Jake Kaner took over a drive for Washington and threw a pick six immediately, and it cost them the game. And the next year, Jacob Eason transferred in, and it just never quite was good under Jacob Eason and then Dylan Morris. Meanwhile, Jake Kaner goes down to Fresno State. UCLA fans will remember him. Jake Kaner goes to UCLA or Fresno State, comes back and rallies them to beat UCLA. That ultimately ends up getting Kalen DeBoer the job at Washington because of some of the big wins he had. And people forget this. Jake Kaner wanted to transfer back to Washington. There was something in the way with the transfer he couldn't. So they ended up getting Michael Penix. Worked out okay for them. But Kaner ultimately got drafted. Fourth round by the New Orleans Saints. But a guy that you looked in at that Elite 11 that year. And that was when they still did, I think, 24 players were selected. And then 12 got to go up to the opening finals. And I think Jake finished maybe 24th because he wasn't the most physically impressive guy. But the guy got to Fresno State and just won. And with Ryan Rakowski, you know, you look at when you're at a school like a JMU, when you're at a school like Holy Cross, you're not used to getting uber elite type of guys, but yet those guys still won. And so that would be a guy you would think that Bob Chesney and Dee Kennedy would look at and say, hey, this guy wins. The other thing, you know, you mentioned it, you broadcast some of his games. Ryan Rakowski's got some ish to him. Like, there's times where the emotions have gotten out of control in games that Palos Verdes was winning, and he's right there at the front, not starting the fight, but he's not backing down. Here's this little guy, this quarterback, 5'11", and he's in the mix, and he's talking, and so he's got kind of that bulldog chihuahua combination crossbreed mentality, where he's like, you know, question me because of my size, but don't question my heart and attitude. And I think, you know, when you're trying to build a program, attitude is a big part of what takes you from being an all-star overlooked program like UCLA to saying, hey, you know, don't mess around with us. We're going to come here. We're going to punch back.
Huff, I got one for you, and I'm not comparing him to this guy because this guy is a Hall of Famer and maybe the best UCLA quarterback of all time. But when I was at Student Sports, there was this guy named Kay McNown, and there was another quarterback named Brock Heward. They're in the same class, and I think – I don't remember exactly what the year. I think it was like my second or third year at Student Sports. Was it like 95? So that was actually my first year, all right? God, that's how old I am.
You are.
And Brock Heward, like to this – I was talking to Ortiz Jenkins, who's, you know, a guy that we both know, and he was a quarterback. And Brock Heward's name came up, and we both kind of said the same thing. Did anybody have more natural arm talent? He threw the tightest spiral, I think, Huff, of anybody I've met. Like Brock Heward looked like a freaking Greek god. And then you had Kay McNown, who was this, you know, we saw him out of camp, bad body quarterback, little like pudgy looking white kid with not a big arm. And it was down to Washington and UCLA. And they both kind of said the same thing. It was kind of ironic. He said, hey, Brock will decide first. Whoever doesn't get Brock, that's where Cade's going to go. And Cade allowed that to happen. Brock went to UW. Cade went to UCLA. And if you saw these guys throw side by side, you would have said, okay, this guy's an NFL guy, and this guy looks like he can play maybe at the JUCO level. Cade ended up being the greatest quarterback in UCLA history, arguably. Mm-hmm. And even though the NFL career didn't pan out, you would take Cade McNown at UCLA 10 out of 10 times. Again, not comparing Ryan Murkowski, but I'm just saying sometimes we, and I say me included, when you're evaluating quarterbacks, you can sometimes overemphasize the physical traits and you kind of overlook, but can he play the position?
Yeah.
So much of the position is above the shoulders, right? It's how quickly does this guy process? Can he read a defense? I remember watching Aaron Rodgers, probably my favorite quarterback in terms of just gifts and talent. I saw him go to the line of scrimmage and he probably changed like 20 things, you know, move this blocker here, move the tight end here, saw the deep. And I'm going, dude, and I'm not going to name a name, but there was a quarterback that was coming up in high school. And I go, dude, there's no way this guy will ever be able to do that. Like, he was rated the number one, number two quarterback in the country. And I go, he will never be able to go to the line, change a block and assignment, move a tight end, read the middle linebacker, see the defense, move. Like, there is no way this guy can do that. And guess what? He never could. Went to three different colleges and never worked out for him. Bryce Young, on the other hand, could figure all that out. Bryce Young wasn't as physically tooled up, but he went and he won a Heisman and was the first overall pick. So I think it's a body of work. Yes, you have to have your minimum traits. You have to throw the ball, you know, somewhat. You can't go out there and throw it only 5 yards. You have to be able to spin the football. Yeah, you have to have the, you know, a certain level of arm talent. But there's so much more that I think that you have to value more. It's you know, anticipation, it's throwing on time, it's being accurate, it's being tough, being a gamer, being a leader. All of that kind of thing goes into play. And I think Ryan Murkowski has the minimum requirements in terms of arm talent. Mm-hmm. And I think he excels in every other year. I've always said this. If you don't have the ideal physical traits, you better excel in every other area. If you're an undersized left tackle, you better be unreal in every other area. If you're an undersized quarterback, if you're a running back that doesn't have maybe all that juice, you better be awesome in every other area. Feel, instinct, power, toughness. And so, I don't know if we expected to talk about Ryan Murkowski for this long.
Because that was kind of where I wanted to lead it to. Is, like, you know, what is UCLA going to do at quarterback? And it's almost like sometimes the most obvious answer is right there under your nose and you just don't see it.
Exactly. It's a good point. You know,
I think an even more relevant in recent comp, not more relevant, but a more recent comp is Mikey Mitchell. You know, Mikey Mitchell was 5'11 on a good day. But every time we would see Mikey at a 7-on-7 tournament or at a camp, he was winning. He was winning MVP. He was throwing. But people could not get over the size. And he commits to Vanderbilt, commits early, almost committed to Ole Miss. People don't know that he almost committed to Ole Miss in the fall of 2024. And there was some reticence to take him by Ole Miss, not because of his size. They wanted him, but because the year before, they took an early commitment from Damon Williams, who was another diminutive quarterback. And then he ultimately ended up flipping to Jed Fish at Arizona. So Ole Miss was a little bit worried that, hey, Mikey, if he ends up getting one of those West Coast offers, mom went to Cal, obviously like Stanford. What if a UCLA or USC come in? And then ultimately commits to Stanford. Vanderbilt gets the big, sexy guy. And Jared Curtis, don't get me wrong, is an elite passer.
Yeah, you know, not
Mikey
bad.
Mitchell, taking reps with the twos in spring as a true freshman. Andrew Luck, I was at the game in the Bay Area when Archbishop Gruden was playing Sacred Heart Cathedral, and Andrew Luck came that night to watch Mikey Mitchell, and they pursued him heavily. And this is a guy who, you look at Andrew Luck, this is what you draw what a quarterback looks like from a size standpoint.
Yes.
You're a typical guy, and Andrew Luck had honed in on making Mikey Mitchell his top priority to get at the quarterback when he became the GM, and ultimately him and TV to Pritchard were able to get him. So we've seen, I mean, shoot, you again, I'm not at all comparing him to some of these other guys. Bryce is an unfair comparison because he was so unique.
Yeah.
At being the number
unicorn.
One player, but
yep.
You know who the winningest quarterback in the, or who the most productive quarterback in the Big 12 is right now that'll be a starter this year?
Tell me, Huff.
Noah Fifita. And
okay.
I think Noah.
Always love that kid.
I know you've been one of the biggest Noah Fifita fans outside of the Fifita family. And again, there's some traits that you see with Ryan
yes.
and Noah in that, oh, well, they're only good because of the receivers around them. Well, Noah had a really good season when T-Mac graduated or had gone to the NFL. Statistically, it was one of his best seasons he had at Arizona. And he didn't have T-Mac. He didn't have the elite receivers. And so at some point, you just got to respect the dude could play. Stop
yes.
it. It's only because of the receivers around him. Last I checked, you know, Palos Verdes does not have an elite group of wide receivers. Yeah, he's got some dudes at Trillion. But at the end of the day, sometimes, again, that obvious answer is right there under your nose and you're not looking at. So,
yeah. Trillion hasn't won anything without Rutkowski playing quarterback. They've had other quarterbacks. Guess how many titles they won? Ryan's the one. Ryan is the guy who's kind of like they win when he plays. And it's so – I remember Noah Fifita at the Polynesian Bowl, and he threw about three balls, and some guy next to me says, dude, Noah's got a cannon. And I go, yeah. He goes, oh, I just assumed because he was 5'8". And again, Rutkowski's 5'10 and a half, 5'11". Yeah. Now, the height and frame are two different things. Ryan is a small frame guy. And so that I'm not saying he's going to go be the number one pick. And if I do have a concern, it's he's a small frame guy. Noah Fifita's 5'8", but he's a stocky guy. You know, obviously – look at a lot of, you know, for me, I look at frame as more important than height, right? So that is my concern with Ryan. It's just the smallest frame and not a lot of room to add a lot of good weight. But, you know, Noah, I even said, Noah, let me see your football. Are you throwing like a Tate Martell ball? Because it was he was ripping the ball. He spins the heck out of it. And I go, man, is that ball like tiny kid size? And he kind of chuckled and threw it. It was a normal size football. And I go, man, this thing pumped up because he had some juice in that arm and he still does. So, before we get off quarterback, I just did want to throw in Brady Edmonds. He is going to take a visit this weekend. So
okay.
That's I don't know when this is going to air. He just texted me.
Oh, and so yeah, very shortly, and that'll be breaking some news in this. So big news because Colton Nussmeier just was there for an unofficial visit, I believe, on Sunday. Now Brady Edmonds taking the visit, official visit, I assume, coming this weekend, and then there's a potential, you know, with Colton Nussmeier visiting Arkansas, I believe, this weekend and then Georgia next weekend. He still has that last weekend available. But that actually is the perfect segue, GB, because we want to preview this upcoming visit weekend. Brady Edmonds will be visiting. There'll be another commit elsewhere that'll be in town. Carise Hoyt, who's been a longtime commit to Baylor, but with the tenuous situation of one-time bro favorite Dave Aranda at Baylor, been taking some or planning to take some official visits. Then a couple of national offensive linemen, Kyle Nabrotsky, who will be taking his official visits this weekend, and then Khalil Johnson, who will be leaving. God, I'm terrible. Where is it that Superman was from? Goodness gracious, Dave Woods.
I know where
I'm totally blowing it. I don't watch comic book movies.
I actually do. It just that makes it even more sad that I can't. I know he's from. He's not from Krypton. I know Kryptonite was his. Kryptonite.
That was the reference Dave made. He's from Krypton.
See, whatever. Greg, yeah.
You covered Brock Heward and Cade McNown. We are now covering Titus Heward. We've been doing this too long, so it's easy for us to forget where Superman came from. Where it's not difficult to remember where these guys came from are So Carise Hoyt coming in out of Texas, Kyle Nebrotsky from Tennessee, then Khalil Johnson from the Midwest. UCLA has four commits coming in this weekend. Colton McKibben is the number one player in the state of New Mexico, been selected to the Navy All-American Bowl, was kind of the first real big surprise of UCLA's recruiting class when he committed. Gage Esty, who probably has the lowest profile in terms of offers, committed to UCLA. He will be coming in for an official visit. And then two guys that I know you're very familiar with that are both commits, Kingston Salifi, who's been busy because he was supposed to visit 2 weekends ago, but had that little thing called state track. You've seen Kingston, you've seen Zach both. For the bros that know that they're both committed to UCLA, quick scouting report on both those guys as they head into their official visit this weekend.
Yeah, so Kingston, pure speed, 10-4, 100-meter guy. His stepdad is Kerry Harris, who played at USC. So Kerry's been talking to me about him since he was a young kid. So kind of has that football background. I don't want to say it's not in his gene pool, but he's been raised on the sport. So he understands the game. He's a two-way guy. He can play receiver or corner. He's coming in to play probably some slot, but game breaker. You can never have – I know if you're a UCLA fan, you've always watched USC have all these receivers that can go. Right. And you don't really see a lot of UCLA always seems to get the possession receivers and USC gets the dynamic game breakers. But Kingston is a dynamic kid. Zach Fairs, unfortunately, Huff, you and I, we haven't seen him a ton in person. I think the last time I saw him in person was he was catching passes at an Elite 11 regional 2 years ago for Thaddeus Thatcher. Right. And we liked him without really. Yeah. So I think you and I, he's a freshman, him and Damani Warren. I didn't know exactly who he was, but I'm going, this guy looks pretty good. So he is a very, I would label him a more of that like hybrid big receiver tight end type. You don't see a ton of inline blocking. He's more of he's going to catch a lot of balls. He's going to run the seam routes, fluid route runner, great hands, natural with it, gives you a little bit something after the catch. But if you want to go like, goal line situation, he's not going to be the guy that's going to move guys around. So he's more of your hybrid big receiver tight end catch and run guy. And I think both are quality guys, and we're very, very good pickups for them.
So both those guys will be coming in for their official visits this weekend. Like I said, McKibben, Gage Esty coming in. But then there's four non-committed guys that are coming in, and three of them right from your wheelhouse, one from Northern California, Thurman Lyles, who is now at Grant High School in Sacramento, was at Elk Grove High School, has seen his recruitment really turn up. Tennessee offered. Then he got an offer from UCLA. Was supposed to visit 2 weekends ago. Pushed that back to this coming weekend. He's got Cal on him, Boise State, and then just yesterday got a USC offer. So that'll be one to watch. UCLA already with, I think, four offensive line commitments now with Weston Hicks joining the mix. But they are – Ryan was completely unintentional. But Thurman Lyles expected to visit. Yet there's an offensive lineman coming in that UCLA has some ground to make up, but they made up ground – in just even getting him to visit, considering they had offered him a year and a half ago and never really seemed to be in it, but he's coming off his visit to Oregon. That's Lucas Roa from Orange Lutheran.
So I think, like you said it perfectly, they're probably still running third. And, Oregon, he just visited. Texas is kind of like, the dream school for him. They're making a strong push for him. So UCLA leapfrogged about 15 teams to get into that top three, because at one point, they were kind of an afterthought. And when I talked to him, it was always Oregon, Texas, Penn State. I think Penn State is still in the mix as well. But I would say, if I'm handicapping it, I would say Oregon, Texas are 1 and 2. So I like Lucas. I actually think that he is a little bit underrated by a lot of people. I think, I think he plays for Chris Ward. So, advanced technique, he's mean. He's tough. He's physical. He had got a little bit of a nice little edge to him. I think he doesn't test that well, but I think he moves and is more athletic than he tests, if that makes any sense. He plays a ton of tackle. I think he'll probably be a guard, but he's got some length. I think he's got a lot of qualities that I like. And I actually think he would be a huge pickup. And, Weston Hicks, I know we kind of glossed over him. I think he's another guy who's gonna move up. We have him kind of at, was he like an 86 or 87?
Yep.
I think he's an 80, 89. I kind of watched him after he committed. He's got a ton of length. He's got some positional versatility. And I think he's a stock up guy who UCLA probably didn't get a ton of fanfare when he committed, but I think he's going to move up the chart just because the physical traits and the tape actually is pretty good too. So the O-line is something that every you know, fan base always says, hey, you can never have enough good offensive linemen. I think UCLA's putting together a pretty good class right now on the offensive line.
And I think that that's been something that UCLA fans, we've glossed over it for years on the show and just saying, hey, where's the beef? You know, that's always the constant gripe when there'd be a visit weekend, whether it be junior day, when there would be game day visits. UCLA always seemed to have a plethora of skill position players, but not linemen. And this year, it's certainly been a case where, you know, they've got offensive linemen. They've got a lot. They've got some good defensive linemen. But the names that everybody always seems to know are the skill position guys. And there's one player in particular that's coming in this weekend who, you know, kind of fancied himself as a receiver, but got an offer from UCLA as a safety. And now he's set to visit this weekend out of one team, one town, San Clemente, Jackson.
Yeah. So Jackson actually is, you know, I think we have him rated as a receiver, and he texted me and said, hey, can you move me to safety? That's where everybody wants me to play. And it basically it's UCLA or BYU. He is LDS. He has two older brothers who go to BYU, and one might have graduated. I think his dad went to BYU. You know, BYU is a hard school to recruit against. If it's a one-on-one battle, it's, you know, kind of like UCLA. A lot of schools, it's hard to beat Stanford head-to-head. Mm-hmm. I think BYU is just as tough if you're dealing with an LDS kid. And so, but I do think UCLA's got a chance. He's going to take both these two trips back-to-back weekends. And, you know, I don't think he'd be tripping to UCLA if he didn't have realistic, didn't have a realistic shot. He's been to the spring game. He's been on an unofficial visit there. He's an Orange County kid who's always liked UCLA a lot. So there will be some pressure on him not saying the family pressure, but there is something to say about a whole family legacy. And, you know, he's a quality player. He's kind of like that hybrid. He's a bigger safety. You know, I think he's probably he's bigger than Paulie Mawala and Khalil Terry. He almost could be like that box hybrid linebacker safety type. I know that's what they kind of see Mawala as, but I think Rex is even bigger than both those two guys. So he's pretty intriguing, like really good all-around athlete. I actually like Rex. I think he's just a really good football player. He's like guy you see go to BYU or Utah and kills it. And you're going, oh, man, why didn't we recruit that guy? That's who Jax Rex is.
You know, another guy that, speaking of BYU, that UCLA is recruiting against BYU for, who will also be in town, is Blake Wong. And, you know, we talked about how UCLA's got quite a few receivers, yet it's been pretty obvious that they still would like to add just one more receiver to that mix. And Blake Wong is the one guy. I mean, with Matthew Gregory, obviously visited last weekend, but they got to kind of weather some visits. And this is another guy where UCLA may have been kind of at the top at one point, but BYU is involved. Utah had him in for a visit last weekend. He's got an Ohio State visit, I think, set for like 2 weeks. And I think Oregon is still involved there. But you've talked to Blake quite a bit. Where does UCLA stand with his recruitment as he heads into the official visit?
Yeah. First off, I mean, I love the name, right? Loving the Lord is Wong. I don't want to be right for those Coming to America fans. I think that he's an interesting case. So Ohio State offered him a year ago. And I think a lot of people said, Ohio State? Like, you're not used to, you know, seeing someone with the last name Wong get recruited by Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And it just, I think people kind of, and I think he heard that as well and kind of has a little bit of like, oh, am I like going to have to go to Ohio State? And then Oregon got involved and people said, oh, is he really a take for Oregon? And I think he took that personally. So it's funny, every time you talk to him without even bringing it up, he's like, yeah, you know, Oregon, they were still recruiting me really hard. And I'm like, I never said they weren't. I think he just kind of hears those whispers of like, oh, what am I supposed to go to, like, you know, Elbow State, A&M? Am I supposed to be like a Cal State Fullerton Titan right now? He's like, I can play. And he's definitely a take for Ohio State and Oregon. They all came in for home visits. That's how you can always tell if the school is serious. If they send out offers, don't mean anything this day and age, but home visits definitely do.
For sure.
So all those schools came in. He is another LDS kid. So BYU, kind of a late addition. Utah also with a little bit of a late addition. So I think he likes UCLA a lot. They really prioritized him. You already mentioned they got a ton of receivers. They've said no to some receivers. They're not saying no to Blake Wong. They will still take him right now. And I think they have to probably wow him on the trip because I think he does kind of see himself as that Ohio State Oregon guy. And this isn't a slight to UCLA, but right now both those two schools, meaning Ohio State Oregon, probably have a little bit more name brand recognition, right? It's a little bit more of a flex to say, oh yeah, I'm going to Oregon. But I do think UCLA is a great fit for him. You know, I think he can go there. And I think he knows, and he said this, I can play earlier at UCLA. And he knows Oregon, Ohio State, they're always going to have a crazy crowded, deep wide receiver room. So I think he's kind of wrestling with the fact that, hey, I love these two schools. They're national brands with huge stages, but UCLA also is local. I can play earlier. So I think that's kind of how it, that's kind of how it sits right now, Huff.
It's going to be a busy weekend because you've got your commits coming in. You've got a good chunk of guys that are not committed. Then again, we've said this before that the hardest part about getting visits is that you then have to watch the other guys that you've been recruiting take other visits. And then you're trying to keep an eye on what's going on their visits, if they're committing. And, you know, June, it's just crazy. And now we're in June and, you know, these next – really, there's 3 weekends of official visits left. UCLA has visitors this weekend. They'll take the following weekend off from visits. Then they will have that last week on the 19th to the 21st, a number of official visitors coming in. But 4 commits visiting this weekend, 2 that are committed elsewhere now with the news that Greg Biggins just broke about Brady Edmonds taking the Ohio State visit, and then Carise Hoyt, and then 6 other uncommitted guys coming in. Before we go, though, we did talk about Elite 11, and UCLA's very, 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 very first commit to Bob Chesney in the 2027 class, Michael Kiko Farinas, committed back in January. And you got a chance to see Kiko on Sunday in 7-on-7. We had already talked about Juju and how he looked. He came from his official visit there. But Kiko, thoughts on him getting a chance to see him on Sunday?
Yeah, no, he's awesome in that environment. And that, again, that's not a slight, but like he kills it in 7-on-7. He's so ridiculously quick and shifty. They probably have Chaparral probably has the best wide receiver coach in the state. You go to a practice and some of the drills, and I'm not comparing him to the late great, our dear friend, Tony Perry, who was like the DB guru, but you see some of the drills that the Chaparral receivers do. Those guys are so advanced and they're going to have probably like 5 or 6 guys sign from a wide receiver standpoint from Chaparral. And so he's really good, man. Like he's explosive. He's twitchy. He's got that short area burst. He creates so much separation just because his ability to, you know, turn a corner around. He can start and stop and stuff. You know, he just does all that super quick twitch fun stuff. He can get deep, get vertical after the catch, extremely explosive. He's a big play guy, you know, undersized, probably 5'8". But you know, ran track 10.7. I'll take 10.7 all day long. So he's got a lot of burst and the kind of, I guess I would say his suddenness that he plays with is different. Like he plays like a door slamming. Like he's very, very twitchy that way. And so the size is the only really knock. Again, 5'8 means, hey, you don't have a big catch radius. It's kind of hard to find you. The ball placement has to be perfect when you're 5'8 or, you know, you can only run certain routes. You know, Zach Branch got knocked. Oh, he only runs this many routes. Yeah, because he can't really run down the field because he's 5'8". It's hard to, you know, the window to throw to a 5'8 downfield receiver is very hard. So a lot of bubbles, a lot of quick slants, a lot of that kind of stuff. So we'll see how UCLA uses Kiko. But he's with the ball in his hands, he's going to be very good.
So all kinds of stuff coming up on this broadcast. I'm glad that this week finally came next week or next week finally came this week. But you got to hear it all. You got to hear our breakdown of what UCLA could be doing at the quarterback position. And all our entire platform that we spent pushing for Ryan Rakowski, you then dropped the bomb that Brady Edmonds will be taking an official visit this weekend. So who knows? Maybe Ryan Rakowski does not have a chance to get on UCLA's radar. We'll see what happens with Brady Edmonds and Ohio State.
Just to make sure we're clear. Brady is still Ohio State committed. You know, so I'm not putting him on commit or a flip watch. The last time I talked to him about Ohio State, my gut is that I think his dream is still to go to Ohio State. So UCLA is going to have to knock it out of the park. During his Ohio State home visit a couple weeks ago, I think they kind of closed the gap on, hey, are you a priority? Am I a priority or am I not a priority? Am I, you know, being recruited over, or do you still value me? And I think Brady got some of those questions answered by Ohio State. And I think he kind of does seem like, you know what, I think I am valued. So be excited that Brady's coming for a visit, but I wouldn't put him on flip watch right now. I think there's still a long way to go. And so, you know, I say that to say, hey, you know, if you wanted Rakowski to camp and you wanted to evaluate him, I think you still have time to do that.
Okay. So Greg Biggins is 100% not making a commitment prediction anywhere. We're sticking Correct. With Ohio State for Brady Edmonds at this point. But there is news that he will be taking an official visit this weekend. We're still waiting to hear if Colton Nussmeier will end up taking an official visit to UCLA on the heels of the unofficial visit that he did take last weekend, or I guess not really last weekend. I guess it was Sunday and Monday after he participated in the Elite 11. Regardless, there's all kinds of information that you can get at only one place. That is on Bruin Report Online, on the Rivals and On3 Network. I guess it's only really on the On3 Network. I'm still new here, Greg, so I'm still learning out the proper verbiage myself.
Same.
We're both still relatively newbies. But a lot going on these next few weeks will still be fun to watch, not just for who's visiting UCLA, but who of the UCLA targets are visiting elsewhere. But keep it dialed in to Bruin Report Online. Tracy McDaniel will be at the UCLA camp on Sunday. Greg and I will be at a multitude of camps all around the West Coast over the next 2 to 3 weeks, just doing our job, doing our work, and we will be bringing all that information to you. So for our longtime awaited guest, Greg Biggins, I'm Brandon Huffman. Thanks for tuning in.